Hello and welcome to another episode of the Healthcare Executive Insights Podcast. My name is Elliot Sloan with the McCallum Group. Today we have a very special guest, Mr. Spencer Hutchins, this co-founder and CEO of Concert Health. Spencer, thanks so much for taking time to chat with us today.
It's great to be here. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So tell us a little bit about your professional career and then what led you to create Concert Health.
I've been at the intersection of health and technology for a couple of decades now, or almost. I've been funding and building businesses for the last 12 years in San Diego. So Concert's the second organization I created and led as a startup. But prior to that, I worked at a family office doing Series A and Series B investments in digital health businesses. Early in my career, I spent some time as a management consultant on the East Coast and take periodic breaks to do public service work. So I was in the first term of the Obama administration helping create a healthcare team at the Federal Communications Commission, right as the iPhone was getting invented, the Affordable Care Act was about to pass, and we were realizing that these worlds of legacy healthcare and digital innovation were going to intersect more and more.
Sure.
Why that's the arc of the career. Why Concert? I stumbled upon a research base that was fascinating to me around showing that integrating behavioral health services into the primary care setting meant the outcomes and the access were way better, right? And then particularly not just integrating generally, but around this particular model called collaborative care. And I just got fascinated by how strong the evidence was, how much darn sense it made, and why was it that no one in my family, myself, anybody I knew was getting this care. It was one of those moments where you feel like you're staring at the future and it's just not evenly distributed yet. And that started a process that got me obsessed about the care model and eventually caused me to believe that someone needed to build a really high-performing behavioral health group practice that could help primary care teams do it. I found my way to my co-founder and that along the way picked up a name and we called it Concert Health.
Why do you think as a society we overlook the importance of behavioral and mental health? It's a bit taboo.
Yeah. Thank God that I think there's enormous momentum in society at many levels to reduce that taboo and to recognize the importance. And so when I look backwards, you know, I think there's some learnings about why we separated the idea of mental and physical as if they were separate things, and also why we downplay the importance of mental health. I think I'm so excited. I think really it's probably being driven more by society than it is our healthcare system of recognizing just how important this stuff is. You watch more people be honest themselves about those conditions, speak to them and speak to how effective treatment can be when they get them. You know, it's fascinating. I mean, you know, certainly obviously a piece of it is that it's physically invisible. It's a little harder to ignore the broken bone or the cancer growing on an organ somewhere in your body. You know, we don't have a physical representation of the brain and the way that the brain interacts with your body to understand those things. Stigma that got built into society, religion, other places, you know, I think it held us back. But I think you have more and more people that are really stepping up, recognizing it. And from practitioners in the U.S. healthcare system, I'd say most primary care providers have known for a long time the importance of these pieces. I think they've been ahead and just powerless to feel like they can make the difference. But I think also the research has shown now so thoroughly how integrated they are.
Sure.
There's a famous statistic that gets cited a lot, which is the same constellation of medical conditions. If you have uncontrolled depression or uncontrolled anxiety, end up driving 2.5 times as much cost into the healthcare system as if you didn't have uncontrolled depression and anxiety. And so that's a big number. That's why the business people care about it, right? Gravitate to it and are now finally making investments. But, you know, I always like to remind all of us that are in the industry, you know, cost is those are surgeries. Those are trips to emergency departments. Those are hospital stays that are too frequent or too long, right? Those are tests. Those are all sorts of medication that really impact patients. And if you can get a handle on people's depression, anxiety, it's so much easier for them to activate around their weight gain, around being a great and active participant, both managing or reversing their diabetes, their hypertension, their blood pressure in ways that can so dramatically improve their lives. And so I'm excited now that both as a society and as a healthcare system in the United States, we're recognizing that we can do so much more and that there's a tremendous ROI for people and the healthcare system.
Yeah, and the payers, they must be very incentivized to try to bring more mental health providers and solutions to the market, because at the end of the day, that's going to bring down the overall cost of a lot of these procedures that could be preventative.
I think that's exactly right. The sad reality is, the way I like to think about it is, in the past, the health plans, the large employers, you know, the people that end up being the ultimate payers of much of our U.S. healthcare system, have this implicit understanding, which is they pretend to cover mental health care. But actually, no one would take their insurance because their rates were so bad. And that if you really wanted to get help, you'd pay cash, right? And so there's really two universes. There was people that were active and wealthy enough that they would seek out and find and get psychiatry or therapy services and pay cash. Or there was a system that would manage very severe, persistent mental illness, people that need to be hospitalized, people that need to do intensive outpatient program, you know, certainly sometimes around substance abuse or drug addiction or things like that, when it got really bad, but just, hey, you've got depression, you've got anxiety, great, we'll pretend to cover it. No one takes our insurance, it's impossible to find. And so you either just live with it, or, you know, maybe you get your primary care physician to care for it in a 10-minute visit, or you find that out yourself. And I think a few things have come to it. One, the most important one is just, hey, that's a socially unacceptable answer, right? This is, you know, and really ever since the George Bush administration, there's been this concept, this momentum that we need to have mental health parity, right? That we need to treat those conditions the same way we treat physical conditions. And we're paying so darn much for health insurance, it needs to cover that stuff. Yeah. That kicked off an idea, at least we're going to start trying. I think also, though, that recognition that the way to get it, I'm glad that there's now more payment. There's more examples in which you can build psychotherapy or psychiatry. We're in the early innings. I think that's important work, but still, it's too often building a better silo, right? It's sort of saying, okay, you're going to find a therapist that doesn't know your psychiatrist, that doesn't know your primary care doctor. And at Concert, we believe it's good work. It's important work that people are doing that. But the way that we can make the biggest difference is not only to strengthen the silos, but to actually bring them together and say that one, primary care really needs to be the de facto mental health care touch point for so many patients, because there's simply not enough psychiatrists. Also, because when you really think about integrating someone's uncontrolled anxiety with their pulmonary disease, you can really understand how to build a shared care plan that really helps them improve their whole life. And the idea that, hey, you need to get their lung function as good as possible. You also need to get them to understand when they might be having a panic attack, right? Because we know that a panic attack will contribute, right? And if you have a psychiatrist doing their best work with, even if you're able to assemble a separate team of a therapist, a psychiatrist, and a primary care doctor all independently intervening, it's not as effective as if you have them working together and you recognize, listen, I need to treat this whole person. I need to recognize that they have uncontrolled anxiety. I need to also recognize they have a serious lung disease. And how is it that I can support them across all of those to improve their standard of life, reduce those panic attacks, get their lung function as good as possible, and give them the coping mechanisms that when they feel it deteriorating, they have the best chance of avoiding that. And so that panic attack doesn't generate a low value emergency department trip, which wastes time, wastes money, and is normally a pretty terrible experience for someone.
Sure. So Concert Health is really creating an opportunity for a continuum of care versus what's happening now. It's kind of like two steps forward, one step back. Like, I'm getting the mental health support, but nobody's communicating and speaking together and collaborating.
Yeah. So what we are is about 250 employed behavioral health clinicians, a mix of what we call collaborative care clinicians, which are licensed, normally master's level behavioral health providers.
Sure.
And we have, there's about 200 of those on the team right now, growing every month, to maybe 220, at the time we're recording now. And then a couple dozen psychiatrists and psychiatric nurse practitioners.
Got it.
What we do is we partner very closely with medical groups and health systems. We work across 13 states now, supporting well over 1,000 primary care providers, OBGYNs, and pediatricians. And what the focus is saying, we're going to build together a really integrated behavioral health service line, shared documentation, working together, using this model called collaborative care, which has a lot of evidence behind it, a lot of research, and is now finally reimbursed by almost every health plan in the country. And
yeah,
so what it allows patients to get is access to care. You know, we really try to maintain same day or next day access anytime we identify depression or anxiety, alongside one of the primary care providers we're working with. But not only access, but then a team that really knows each other, documents in the same place, works together to support the whole person, and figures out ways that they can drive symptom reduction in their depression, their anxiety, whatever their behavioral health condition is, but also do that in a way that supports the goals of the broader chronic diseases they might have.
Sure. Yeah. And just think about the reduction of barrier to entry you guys are creating. Because if you look at someone who's got high stress, high anxiety, like you said earlier, they're going to have to go to that extreme point before they seek help themselves. Whereas mm-hmm. if their primary care or their family medicine doctor said, hey, we think this would help and we have a partner and we'd like to set you up, you're going to get such a larger adoption rate of people who could use the mental health and behavioral health services versus with that light recommendation versus someone who has to go figure it out themselves.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. You know, unfortunately, as the resistance to the idea of mental health is decreasing, right, and the awareness is increasing, there's more people that really are saying, listen, I want help. I think I have depression and I want help. It's great that that self-awareness is growing, that stigma is falling.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of folks that might be resistant, or they might understand it at the symptom level. They sleep terribly. They're feeling hopeless a lot. You know, they're often tired or have little energy. That's what they think about it. They think about having a sleep problem or an energy problem or grieving or nervousness, you know, and I think it can be really powerful to understand that and then have a team together and says, hey, we're going to work on that. You know, there's one of the evidence-based models that people have been pushing for a while is universally screening people. And you maybe have gotten this, probably many of the listeners will think about this because it is getting more popular. It's a tool called the PHQ-9. It's a 9-question survey that everybody should be asked at least once a year. And then you should be asked around major medical diagnoses, if you come out of a hospital, every trimester of pregnancy, a tool like this, which is really just saying, hey, in the last couple of weeks, how often have you? And it sort of gets you a list of things, had little or no pleasure in doing things, had a poor appetite, or really overeating, right? But seeing a big difference in the way you eat. Have you trouble concentrating or trouble falling or staying asleep? And that's really important because what you find is you're picking up like half the depression and anxiety that people don't notice in a quick doctor's office visit. And so one of the things that we work with our primary care teams is really making sure they do that, right? They screen everybody because you know you pick up a lot of people that aren't aware of or don't put two and two together that those things are a constellation of symptoms that make them more likely that they might have depression or anxiety. And so using that to identify, start a conversation, and then have a really low access barrier to say, hey, this is just an extension of your primary care team. There's a colleague of mine, that they'll call you, you know, or do a video visit or in-person visit to sort of understand how you're feeling, track those symptoms over time, and teach you some coping strategies that helps you address those, you know, as you move forward.
Yeah. And I imagine this can be an automated process for any primary care office to send these surveys out to all their patients at the right cadence that could then just feed back to your team. And it's, you know, a really quick way to get those patients in front of the right providers.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk and a lot of exciting work happening with big data in healthcare. This is an example of you can start pretty small. It's a 9-question survey. You know, you don't need, there's not a lot of complexity. One of the reasons that it really hasn't happened yet is because the physicians, frankly, we hear this over and over again, they feel powerless, which is if I screen everybody, I'm going to uncover this, but then what do I do? You know, I don't feel like I was really trained on these medications, these diagnoses that well. If I try to get people in to see psychiatrists or see therapists, a bunch of patients say, no way, right? That's the resistance. Or even if they want the care, they can't find someone that'll take their insurance or that'll have a visit for the next 3 months, right? And so as you gain confidence that they have a true partner that can help them manage and control, reduce these symptoms, that will have access to their patients, they get more excited about this kind of work, right? Because everybody gets into primary care to make their patients healthy. That's why they do it, right? And this is a great way to both uncover disease, right? Uncover suffering in their population. And there's a lot more enthusiasm to do it when they have confidence that they have an intervention arm, right? A way to really feel like they're moving the needle, making a difference in people's lives. And so what we're really focused on is by having that deep partnership with primary care, which now, frankly, is now payable. It's reimbursable. Finally, for the first time, the health plans have said, if you want to build this collaborative care model, this three-person team of primary care, collaborative care clinician, and a psychiatric consultant, that will support it. Right? This is good. This is a good investment for the team. So one thing that we're always loving forums like this is having people realize, like, if they're running a primary care organization, if they're a primary care physician themselves or obstetrics, in their contracts already is this collaborative care model, and it's incredibly effective. It's evidence-based, and it can work. And if they want to go do it themselves, we love that. If they want to go hire behavioral health clinicians, psychiatrists, learn the details of how to do this, build a patient registry and do what's called measurement-based care, we love that and we'd support that. Or if they say, hey, that sounds amazing, but it's not my core competence, you know, that's what Concert was built for groups that said, this needs to happen, but it can't be my number one priority. And I'd rather work with someone who it is their number one priority. And that's really why we built Concert, and why Concert, I think, is growing in such exciting ways this year.
Wow, a really turnkey solution. And so what I'm hearing is, if you're looking for a mental health specialist and you just try to look in your market, chances are those are out-of-network specialists, and it's going to be extremely challenging to find anyone who will take your in-network policy. And the only way to find the mental health, or maybe not the only way, but the solution you've created is by doing this three-prong partnership. Insurance is saying, okay, we'll take these in-network plans and we'll get them to the mental health specialist, but it's got to be this collaborative care model. We won't support necessarily the one-offs.
Yeah, or they, maybe the plans are supporting them, but the networks just are not big enough, right? The other thing, and so, you know, many of the plans are paying for psychotherapy. They just can't get enough folks to take their care. Sure. And also, you know, for a lot of patients, collaborative care is more effective and more patient-centered, right? Right now, it's kind of an all or nothing thing, right? You either get nothing, or maybe your doctor will prescribe you an antidepressant in a 10-minute visit, you know, and then you take that. And if you want something else, you have to get therapy, which is so often a 1 hour in-person weekly session, right? And a lot of people might not want or need that, or might not want to start there. They might want a quick phone call, right? That just checks in on how their symptoms are doing and helps them manage whether or not there's any complications in that medication. Right. Or maybe they want that and they're okay with a little bit of coaching around exercising more, but they don't have the time or the interest to talk about their childhood or dig into trauma or one of those things, or they just don't need to. Right. Sure. And what collaborative care says is, listen, we're going to meet you where you are. And we're going to have clinicians that have the ability to offer a spectrum of interventions that are convenient for you and that you opt into. But the thing we're going to hold ourselves accountable for is that we're going to measure these symptoms just like we would your sugars or your blood pressure, your weight, right? And we're not going to let you continue to suffer. So right. We're going to use a tool like the PHQ-9. We're going to use it not just once, not just at that annual visit to screen and check the box. We're going to use it every month, right? Or even a couple times a month. And then we can really trend that over time to say, okay, a month ago, you were sleeping terribly every night. Now you're sleeping terribly half the nights. You know, or now, you know, you have littler, pleasure doing things. That was almost constant. Now it's, it's every once in a while. And that really is powerful for a couple of reasons. One, you can celebrate the wins. Hey, we're maybe not all the way where you want to be, but let's respect the progress we've made. And we know that about psychology, that if you get momentum, that can really help. The other thing is it holds the clinician, the primary care doctor, the collaborative care clinician, the behavioral health specialist, as well as the psychiatric consultant accountable for saying, hey, there's this patient that maybe they're doing visits with us, they're doing sessions, they like us, our net promoter scores are good, that's great. But you know what? Their symptoms aren't getting better. And then we say, okay, well, let's come together, right? And let's review that person and say, if their symptoms aren't getting better, what are we going to do different? Are we going to change the approach in psychotherapy? Are we going to, do we not actually have the diagnosis right? Or do we not have the medication right? Or is the medication the wrong dose, right? There's a lot of levers to pull, but it holds you accountable, not just as the care team, but alongside the patient, right? That says, we're going to get better. And that is really it's more cost effective. It's more time efficient for patients. It's more clinically effective, and it ends up engaging and empowering people because it lets them respect what it is that they want. Right. Sure. And you see that a lot in this case. You have some people that will simply say, I have no interest in therapy. I'll take a med. Okay. We'll start with that. We'll see whether or not a med, you know, there are effective antidepressants. They can be really effective on their own. Other people, but some will need that in combination with some type of behavioral activation or psychosocial intervention. Vice versa, you have other people that say the opposite, right? I think pills are terrible. You know, my cousin had this awful side effect. I have no interest in that, but I would really love help unpacking my marriage, my relationship, right? You know, what it is that's preventing me from doing the level of exercise or eating healthy that I know I should do and I think would make me feel better. And the collaborative care team can say yes to all of that, right? Yes to start that, yes to work together and really hold accountability alongside the primary care doctor and the patient to sort of say, how is it that we measure these and how do we make sure people get better? And that's the way people want, right? That's a better way to be guided. And it's the way that primary care doctors want to practice, right? As opposed to sort of saying, okay, I can shoot you to a therapist. I hope you get to one.
Yeah.
And they're only going to do one thing, which is an hour long session, which, you know, the patient may not have time for. They might not be able to afford. They might not be able to get out of work for that, right? And so the flexibility to say, oh, we can fit it around your schedule and fit it around your needs is a really powerful way to live we like jargon in healthcare, right? You know, and we always talk about being patient-centered, right? And it's like it gets used so much, you barely know what it means. But that, I think collaborative care when done well is like really trying to be patient-centered, you know, around we're going to measure symptoms. We're going to get you better together. You and I are going to get you better together. And how is it that what are we going to do? What do you want to do? What do you have time to do in order to be on that journey?
Tell me, what do you see for the future of value-based care programs?
Yeah, I mean, it's so exciting, although it's also alphabet soup at times, right? I think, thank God that we are, you know, shifting away from just the idea that revenue should flow through the volume of services, right? You know, it should be focused on good services, high value, and ultimately we want everybody aligned around keeping folks healthy and out of the hospital. And so those are good trends. But I think about really almost, you know, sometimes we conflate them. I think it's important to separate. One is, are we doing evidence-based, high-quality care that is valuable? You know, that's the most important thing. And I think, frankly, in the case of behavioral health, we need to do more of it. There's a ton of people that are not getting the support they need, and this is a place where we actually need to grow volume. Right, more people need to get supported for their mental health, and we need to support the workforce and grow the workforce to make that happen. And we need to put them in models that are proven to be effective, like collaborative care. And so that's the most important. That's actually the thing that gets me excited the most is how are we doing great work that gets people better and that respects the great clinicians in this country and gives them a job where they can do their best work, right? And gives them a role to do that and be compensated fairly for it. So that's value-based care. Right. You know, and then I think about, but sometimes we use that same term to mean, hey, are we getting paid for it that way? Right. You know, and that piece is important too, value-based payment, because it's, you know, the activities will follow the economics. And I am incredibly, the part that I'm most excited for is not consumer-driven healthcare by themselves, because I think ultimately when you get really sick, you need help. Right, you're not experts in this stuff. Asking anybody to navigate on their own is a mistake. You really need a partner, and I think the natural partner is a high quality primary care physician, right at the center. That's sort of saying, "Listen, I know you, Spencer. I've known you for not days, not weeks, but years, right? And I can really help you stay as healthy as possible. And then when you get sick, I can be there to help you make the best decisions possible. And so I get really excited about value-based care that's built around a trusting, powerful relationship with a primary care provider. And I think the definition of primary care needs to include integrated behavioral health services because it's too core to what we are. And it's something like 15% of us in any given year, probably even a little more than that now, due to the pandemic, are suffering with some behavioral health condition. That's a broad enough spectrum. And the evidence is so clear that interacts with and reinforces the rest of your chronic conditions, that I'm really excited about the payment models that shift centralized primary care, and then focus on empowering them with that broad team.
Sure.
Helping them fill out that concert, if you will.
Tell me about technologies that you're using to help create these collaborative care programs.
Yeah. You know, it's 2022 and all that we do needs to be embedded by great technology. And thank God, you know, I think the consumers of healthcare are starting to say, hey, the rest of my life is a lot easier than you make it, right? And so, you know, let's close this gap. And so I think, you know, really we focus all of our technology innovation on improving the patient-clinician interaction. So how do you make that as smooth as possible? So one is, you know, interacting with patients how they want. Is it an easy video visit or just a phone call, right? You know, what's easy for you? How do you fit it into your day? You know, what kind of connectivity, what kind of device do you have? So really sort of lowering the barrier in the patient side to see, there's lots of ways I can connect with you. There's lots of ways we can improve your life and your care. And so let's make it as easy as possible. The second place that we really do it is around these risk analytics, right? And really understanding how that you take the data from these tools like the PHQ-9 or Notes and really understand and give the frontline clinicians and their supervisors a view into not just who's on my calendar today, but who am I responsible for, right? Who have we identified? And how do we make sure that we're also thinking a lot about those people that aren't on the schedule today, right? That maybe missed their last visit, right? Or they're disengaged, we had really bad symptoms. And then third place that we do is a lot with integration with the medical records of the primary care physicians we work with. We would never work with primary care doctors unless their health system or medical group gives us access to directly read and write into the medical record, because the doctors are just too darn busy. And they can't look at another portal. It doesn't matter how nice it looks and how good our login process is and our logos, or if we gamify it, you know, their day is busy, their life revolves and their documentation revolves around that medical record. And you really need to make that work so that it works point of care for that physician. And because we know if we make it work for that primary care doctor, she's going to lean in, right? She's going to actually change the way she practices medicine just a bit. She's going to change the way she prescribes and diagnose just a little bit with the help of our psychiatric consultants. And she's going to vouch for us, right, when she introduces the concert team to her patient. And we know that's absolutely critical to engage patients. And so a lot of our technology involvement is trying to make the lives of our clinicians and the way that they work with the primary care teams easier and easier.
So it's
the last piece is really around, you know, you got to get serious about the annoying parts of the U.S. healthcare system. And it's about how do you take all these activities, these video visits, these surveys, these consultations that I've done, and turn them into an effective way of how you get paid for them, whether or not that's in a pay for a code, you know, a fee for service or a fee schedule based billing, or it's about quantifying the clinical outcomes that you're now going to get paid for in value based agreements that you've got with health plans.
Sure. Knowing what to do with that data, how to present it for proper reimbursements.
Exactly.
And what has been your most effective strategy to grow the business and to find new primary care partners out there that would love to bring mental health and behavioral health into their practice?
Yeah, I'd say that's transitioning. You know, for the first couple of years, it was really convincing people to bet on a brand new model they'd never heard of, a new reimbursement schema. And, you know, a lot of people pitch things to doctors and they overpromise and underdeliver. This will be great. You'll make money. Your patients will get better. It'll be super easy, you know? And so I think early on, it was really, you know, convincing people that we were going to bring the goods, right? And not overpromising, and then working like hard to execute. You know, it's exciting now that we've taken care of tens of thousands of patients across 13 states with thousands of primary care doctors and dozens and dozens of medical groups and large health systems. And so that proof of, we're not just making this stuff up is getting a little easier. Yeah. And now it's really about finding folks that really share our clinical vision and really have, want to be on that, journey. And then the other part of growth is just really respecting the operational processes and the job that we give our great behavioral health clinicians so that we be a magnet for the best clinicians that want to do great work, that want to be pushed, frankly, to have very high standards around the way they measure outcomes, that really want to have this collaboration with a psychiatrist and a primary care provider and want that to get pushed a bit, right? And to make the biggest difference they can and find great clinicians as we continue to grow. And it's exciting. We're often having 5, 10, 15 clinicians join every month as we're keeping up with growth from the referrals we're seeing from our existing and newly launching primary care partners.
Yeah, the cat's out of the bag. And now people are starting to hear about Concert Health and opportunities are coming to you.
Yeah, it's been exciting and it's humbling because, people take this seriously. I mean, people, have been practicing medicine for a long time. They've been building relationships with patients for years, and they're going through their own transition in their model. There's a lot of consolidation. There's a lot of new startups in the primary care space. There's this transition of their business model. And so, we take that really seriously, that service to that partner in practice. And hopefully we can make a small difference in helping them feel like they're better doctors, helping them build the practice that they want, and helping them succeed in the future of the way their clinical and revenue models are going to come together.
Sure. So what do you see over the next few years? How long until you see every state reimbursing this collaborative care model? And when will Concert mm-hmm. Health be available in every state across the country?
Yeah. It's already reimbursed nationally for Medicare and Medicare Advantage. Sure. Almost every major national commercial plan, United, Aetna, Cigna, TRICARE, Anthem, almost all the regional blues are paying for this. The major gap is in Medicaid. So we have about a little better than half the states in which the Medicaid departments have not put it on the fee schedule. And we think that's so important because you need to make it work. One, there's 80 million people that have Medicaid right now. It's our largest insurance program in the United States. Also, the primary care doctors do not want to think about which insurance does someone have and have a solution just by insurance. It really needs to be everybody they see today. Yep. And a lot of primary care physicians are seeing people with Medicaid every day. And so it needs to work there. So we're really trying to be advocates there as everywhere we're working, pushing. We are expanding. We're now in 13 states. You can see them on the websites, which they are. I think it'll probably be a little while before we're all 50. The scale of the need is so great. And most of our partners, the health systems we work with, the medical groups we work with, they're not distributed everywhere, right? They're in certain pockets. And so we're going to go to places where the payment works for everybody and also really try to deepen the partnerships in some of those places, deepen the work, as opposed to need to be in all 50 states. It's partially the stakeholders we're serving. We're not working with large employers, as an example, that want to make sure they have it for every employee everywhere. So I think you'll continue to see geographic expansion, but it'll be a while before it's all 50 states.
Well, you certainly have your work cut out for you. There's unfortunately no shortage of patients that truly need behavioral and mental health. And it's been a real pleasure learning about this model you're bringing to the market. I think that your team and the services you're providing with this collaborative care is only going to make primary care physicians more powerful and give them confidence to jump into these conversations where I think for many years they unfortunately kind of step around them.
Yeah, I think that's right. We've often thrown responsibility on primary care providers without throwing resources at them, right? Or systems or tools. And we want to be a different approach, right? To say, listen, you can do this, you can do better, but not just to work harder, right? But not to do it by yourself, but to have the real team, the expertise and the processes to really be able to systematize this and makes it easy to get out of bed every day and work our tails off to keep making Concert not only bigger, but better every day.
Sure. Well, Spencer, thank you so much for your time today. We've learned a lot. I know our audience will really enjoy learning about what you guys are doing. And I'm confident you guys will continue decreasing this gap of care for mental health and behavioral health that is very apparent. I'm confident that those 20% of people who need it through your services will have a much better opportunity of getting access to that care.
Great. Well, I really enjoyed connecting. And if any of your audience wants to learn more, they can always find me on LinkedIn or Twitter, or the website's just concerthealth.com. And we'd love to chat with them there.
Terrific. We'll definitely circle back with you in a few months and find out what is the latest and greatest happening over at Concert Health.
That sounds great. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks again, Spencer. Take care.